This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. 160 years ago this week, two of the towering figures in the abolition movement met in Detroit. March 12, 1859, John Brown and Frederick Douglass sat down together in Detroit to talk over their strategies for ending slavery. The University of Detroit Mercy School of Law is marking the historic anniversary with a symposium titled Detroit's Abolitionist Movement, 160 Years of Fighting for Justice. Nick Schreck is with us, Director of Clinical Programs at UDM Law. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you for having me.
And Ken Coleman is with Michigan Advance, a Detroit history buff and author of On This Day, African American Life in Detroit. Hey, Ken, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
So, Ken, what brought John Brown and Frederick Douglass to Detroit on this March 9, 1859?
Well, it was interesting. Frederick Douglass was wrapping up about a six-week tour through Big Ten states and talking about the importance of ending slavery. And so in about 6 weeks, Douglass gave about 50 speeches. Mm. And his last one, as we know it, was on March the 12th, 1859 in Detroit.
And then John Brown, who really was, he moved all over. He just tried to do a pin map of John Brown's location. What brought him up? Was it specifically to meet Douglass?
No, not specifically, but it was definitely on his mind. By that time, by 1859, John Brown was a Kansas resident. And an African-American from Missouri, a slave state, contacted Brown and wanted to have Brown assist him and several members of his family reach freedom. And Brown took the African-American gentleman up on that offer. And so what brought John Brown to Detroit in 1859 was obviously the last stage along the Underground Railroad. And with John Brown were about a dozen African-American slaves who had left Missouri who were looking for freedom. And so destiny brings Brown and Douglass together for that reason. But again, as I point out, the gentlemen had known each other, Brown and Douglass had known each other for about a dozen years. And Brown sees this as another opportunity, yet another opportunity to try to convince Frederick Douglass about this crazy idea he has about Harper's Ferry that would occur later that year.
Yes. Now, let's dig down into exactly what Brown's agenda was. What was his plan, and what did he want to get Frederick Douglass's imprimatur on?
Yeah. So he wanted to get the support. Brown wanted to get Douglass's endorsement, if you will, for this idea that he had around Harper's Ferry. And Harper's Ferry was an arsenal, and it had proximity to the South where slavery was still being carried out. And Brown has this idea, if he can recruit thousands of people to go along with him to overtake, commandeer Harper's Ferry, it could ultimately become the first stage, if not the military, the base, excuse me, could be the first stage in providing and creating this haven for freed slaves where they would push back against American slavery. And so in October of 1859, that's what happened at Harper's Ferry. But the meeting in Detroit at William Webb's home, an African-American abolitionist, that meeting on March the 12th, 1859, was another opportunity that John Brown had to try to convince Frederick Douglass that this was the way to go.
And Frederick Douglass's response was?
Not so much. Douglass clearly respected John Brown. In fact, if you go back to Frederick Douglass's North Star publication, as far back as 1848, Douglass writes about John Brown in very, very, very good terms. He called him one of the most interesting people that he had ever met. And the gentleman did speak and meet several times between 1848 and 1859, but they didn't necessarily agree on the tactic to end slavery in America.
Take us back to that 160 years ago. What did Detroit's abolitionist movement look like at the time?
You know, obviously the proximity of Detroit to Windsor, Ontario, and Canada made Detroit a very important stop, as it pointed out, really the last stop along the Underground Railroad. You know, in 1859, Detroit had a small but very, very, very interesting and powerful African-American community. The 1860 census says about 1,400 African Americans lived in Detroit out of the city's 40,000 residents. So it was a small community, but a very influential community. You had people like William Lambert and George de Baptiste, African Americans who were prominent in the abolition movement. But there were also whites who felt the same way. And the Anti-Slavery Society, a chapter, if you will, of the Anti-Slavery Society had been founded in Detroit as far back as 1837. And so you had whites and blacks who believed that slavery was wrong. Now, I often point out, and we've learned in recent years, that there were slaves, African slaves or black slaves in Michigan in the 1700s, but certainly by 1837 and certainly by 1859 when Brown and Douglas meet, it is a free zone for African Americans to live and prosper, and some of them moved on to Canada. Some of them lived in Detroit proper, but it was a very progressive, we would use the term progressive. It was a very progressive community as it relates to race, and at least on the issue of slavery.
Nick, where do we find the historical marker that commemorates that meeting that happened between Frederick Douglass and John Brown?
Yeah, so it's right on Congress and St. Antoine. There's a grassy area next to one of the Blue Cross buildings right in that area. And there's two markers, one noting the first synagogue in the city of Detroit, and then another noting that the location of William Webb's house was just a few hundred yards from that location. And that's actually where, you know, at least I had the idea when walking by that historic marker on the way to the law school for work, I said, wow, you know, you look at the date and you think, huh, that's coming up on an anniversary. And, you know, come to find out there had been a celebration in Detroit on the 150th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And so this is a nice sort of continuation of that. But yeah, just right there, you know, just mm-hmm. a block in from Jefferson off St. Antoine and Congress.
Just a few short months after John Brown and Frederick Douglass sat down together in Detroit, which was March 12, 1859. Well, on October 17, 1859, Brown led that fateful raid on Harper's Ferry in West Virginia, 7 months and a day, actually, after the Detroit meeting. And his men killed 4, wounded 9, and 10 of Brown's men were killed, including his 2 sons, 7 captured, including Brown. And then he was hanged on December 2nd in Virginia. Nick, you've unearthed your own family connection with John Brown?
Well, yeah. So my grandmother is a Brown. And so I always knew we had a connection, but I wasn't exactly sure where it was along the family tree. And so John Brown and I share a common ancestor. He would have been my 8th great grandfather. So a little bit further back in time here, but this Peter Brown of Connecticut would have been John Brown's, I think, second or third great grandfather. And so, you know, we're distant cousins, but sort of neat history. And some of my Brown family that still lives in Pennsylvania, in the Erie County, Pennsylvania area, have much closer connections to John Brown. So it's been really neat to sort of unearth that. And when I was around the same time that I noticed the historical marker, I was also reading a book, Tony Horwitz, the guy that wrote Confederates in the Attic, and he also wrote a book called Midnight Rising about John Brown. And they mentioned this meeting. And so then I started doing a little bit more research and came across David Reynolds, who's going to be our keynote at the event tomorrow, who wrote a book that I think really went a long way to try and sort of rehabilitate the image of John Brown in a lot of people's minds, because he was, you know, viewed by many as a terrorist, you know,
and that's what they would have called him today.
Absolutely. Today. You're right. Yeah. Looking back. And so Professor Reynolds, you know, he really went back and looked at, okay, looking at the context, you know, what was going on at the time, and really, you know, John Brown, who felt, you know, this biblical conviction that slavery was a state of war mm-hmm. against African Americans. And so in his mind, what he did in Harper's Ferry was just a part of the battle in that ongoing war. And so, you know, I think we'll hear a little bit more about some of that context, about, you know, what brought these men to this meeting, what they were hoping to achieve. And yeah, that tension that, as Ken mentioned, you know, you had this sort of different goals, different ways of trying to achieve the ultimate abolition of slavery that both Brown and Douglass brought to that meeting.
And Ken, when you think of the impact of that Harper's Ferry raid and Brown's execution, mm-hmm. what was that deflection point in history? Where did it lead us?
Well, I mean, certainly I think that Brown's efforts, particularly at Harper's Ferry, really sort of helped to crystallize the real internal battle that America was facing, and led to, I think, I would certainly make the argument, the Civil War. And, you know, the major issues, one of the major issues, obviously, around the Civil War was slavery.
Yes,
from an economic standpoint, from a social standpoint. And so that was really, I look at Harper's Ferry as a touchstone moment that ultimately led to, you know, what would become a couple years later, the start of the Civil War.
And there was very real panic in the South at that time, mm-hmm. that, you know, Brown's idea that this actually would spread, that you would have additional uprisings in other communities. And so that really started, I think, fanning the flames of division that we're already seeing in this country.
Indeed.
And you had... a lot of, I guess, you know, the luminaries, the really big thinkers of the day, the Thoreaus, you know, that were coming out and talking about John Brown, you know, sort of turning him into this hero and this someone that the song John Brown's Body that became,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
a key,
yeah.
mm-hmm. You know, Union marching tune to help kind of rally, you know, rally that spirit towards, you know, fighting the South and slavery. So, yeah, I mean, really, I think it is a definite touchstone moment and something that, looking back and from today's perspective, it's hard to realize what people were thinking in the South, and you know, mm-hmm. you had this idea of like, oh my gosh, what if
all
of these people,
invaded.
Right, exactly, yes. or all these people that you know were holding in bondage in our communities, if they revolt, yeah, what would happen? Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, this is on the heels of Nat Turner and, you know, some other, you know, very high profile incidents.
And Brown is a white man, let's be clear about
right, yeah, right,
it,
right.
That created shockwaves,
right.
mm-hmm. you know, particularly in the South, that, you know, if a white guy is willing to do this, yeah, so it definitely touched on.
Well, it should be a fascinating symposium, and it is free and open to the public from 9 till 12:30 tomorrow, right there at the main branch of the Detroit Public Library. And all they ask is that you RSVP by going to the University of Detroit Law School website, law.udmercy.edu. And we've enjoyed talking with UDM Law Professor Nick Schreck and Ken Coleman, Detroit history buff and journalist with the Michigan Advance. Thank you so much to both of you for taking us back 160 years to this very historic meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.